Hi, and welcome to PicardCast. As always, I'm Brooke, and I'm here with the lovely Rebecca.
Hello, good to be back.
Great to be talking to you. And we're, of course, not alone. Occasionally we are, but we're not because we need to finish up In a Mirror Darkly with Scott.
Hi, everybody.
I guess everybody's doing okay in the pandemic and all that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just another week.
Well, my daughter went off to college this week, so now I'm angst-ridden on a whole nother level because, you know, you see things like UNC Chapel Hill has clusters of this. Well, my daughter's at Texas State University, and I'm like, well, how long are they going to last this year before they close everything down? But, you know, that's just me, I guess. I mean, I'm not just me. I'm sure like a million parents who are sending their kids to university are panicking about, you know, if and when things are going to close. But yeah, this whole pandemic situation is not how I pictured my daughter going to school. Off topic completely. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Is your son, is he going to have to actually go to class, or is he going to be doing like from home stuff?
We took the virtual option. He's in fifth grade. He starts fifth grade this year.
He goes to middle school next year.
He's pushing on to it, you know, like this year is his last elementary year, so he's kind of disappointed because at his elementary school they have this tradition to take all the fifth graders camping for a weekend, and that's definitely not happening this year. Well, I mean, I'd rather, you know, let's get through this. And,
yes.
You know, I mean, I'm not much of a I'm more of a nerd than a camper, but yes. I'll pitch a tent and, you know, whatever I got to do.
I'm a very indoor person, but, you know, I feel sad for him.
I mean, people like you and I, we have the whole nerd life thing going. I mean, he's upstairs playing Roblox right now and interacting with his friends. And I think he's kind of used to that right now. I mean, he's been into Fortnite and Roblox and, Rainbow Six, believe it or not. I kind of feel bad about that one. But, you know, I mean, online gaming, you know, is his kind of nerdy thing right now. And the cool thing is with Roblox, he's coding.
Oh.
I've tried to teach him coding myself, right? Because, you know, I'm a programmer. But he himself is, like, learning to, like, write JavaScript or whatever Roblox uses because I haven't analyzed it too much. And I'm like, he spends, like, half the day playing the game and half the day coding. Like little script stuff for the kid. He's literally a script kitty. So that cracks me up.
Oh, well, that's a lot of fun. So, you know, he's doing his own techno babble because I'm going back to
and
Star Trek since.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to do
that. He'll understand it. He'll be able to reverse the polarity soon.
All right, so we are going to talk about the second part of In a Mirror Darkly, or as I call it, the soap opera in space, because they are way over the top in this. And I still haven't watched any more Enterprise.
Honestly, I would start at the beginning of season 3. I mean, it opens with this kind of 9/11 analogy thing, but it's like a whole season long. Like the season 4 is like old Doctor Who, where it's like 2 or 3 episodes for one story. And then, of course, it ends. Which sucks, because it was just getting good, but watch season 3 from beginning to end, you'll love it. I mean, it's so good.
I will put that on my list of things to watch. So, this episode was directed by Marvin V. Rush. The dog is back with her squeaky toy.
Squeaky toy of doom.
This one is a hippo. Oh, and now she has a chimichanga, and she sings.
Oh my goodness.
It's amazing. Oh, this is going to be a real fun day. All right. So, the story was by Manny Cotto, and the teleplay was done by Michael Sussman. The original air date was April 29th, 2005, and that just, 2005 just seems like yesterday and like 400 years ago at the same time.
Sure does.
We've got the same scene, same players. Behind the scenes, I'm multitasking because I'm playing tug with my dog because she will not be quiet.
Multi-podcasting.
Okay, hold on. I have to get rid of the squeaky toys. I just left her out in the living room with all the other toys. We open up to a scene on the Defiant. Archer gives orders that can't be completed because it's not in proper working order. They're able to raise the shields, to try to weaken the hold from these clamps that it's clamped into, he decides that they need to start moving the thrusters back and forth so that they could try to break free. They do, but the Thalan ships create a web over the opening of the dock, and they prevent the Defiant from going anywhere. Then we go to the introduction with all the war and everything. The war-filled theme song.
Yeah, no Faith of the Heart this time.
Right?
Just war.
I mean, can I put this out there that, you know, when I put this on, it had been a few years since I'd put on Enterprise, so I'm like, did they change it for season four? Then I realized that they were just doing this for the Mirror Universe thing. But I was thinking to myself, I think people's opinions of this show would have been like about 100 times better if they had just done this. You know, no other theme music. This is fine.
Agreed. Yeah, I think when people, although some people like the theme song, but I think when people complain about Enterprise, one of the complaints is the theme song. For me, that was always a big turnoff. Like, I just was like, ugh, what is this? Like, it just didn't seem to fit for me. But no, there are a couple people out there who do like it, but I think the show would have done better without words in the theme music, personally.
Well, none of the theme music before it in Star Trek really did, like, vocalizing, and, you know, it wasn't, like, poppy.
Right.
And, you know, it was just, like, a simple theme that caught your attention and just really went with it. And it worked. I don't know. I mean, that's just me, I guess. I don't want to get too much into stuff like that.
I threw another toy to the dog, but now she's sparking again, so that's okay. I mean, I did watch the very, very first part of the very, very first episode of Enterprise, and then I was like, I need to actually watch the episodes that we're going to do, because I'm never going to make it.
Right.
But I was just like, because I wanted to get an idea of who everybody was, but it is the time where you can easily skip intro if you need to. So, I like that I use everybody's last names on this when not everybody goes by their last names, because I wrote Tucker and T'Pol restore power to the weapon systems. That lets the Defiant destroy enough of the enemy vessels to escape the web. As they're getting away, Reed notices that there's escape pods from the Enterprise heading towards them. Looks like they all had to get off the Enterprise. It was 47 people, and they got beamed onto the Defiant. Tucker's ordered to restore the power to the warp drive. He says he thinks it'll take like 2 or 3 days, but Archer's like, I need it in 12 hours. Which is not the first time in this set of episodes that he's been like that to him. So, I don't know. It's just sort of amusing. He's just like, well, I need it in 6.
Right.
For me, it's just so funny because that's not how he is in the other episodes.
No. Well, he is more like a rogue when it comes to, you know, like his character.
We find out that the Defiant usually has a crew of 400 people. 400 people? Did it have 400 people on anything else? I just always think of the Defiant on Deep Space Nine, which this is supposed to be the one from the Shatner era, right?
Oh, yeah. This is from original series.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely not the Defiant of Deep Space Nine.
Like a way ship sort of thing. So, yeah, you know, they're kind of like, we don't have anybody, and this is supposed to take 400 people. Archer doesn't care. He dismisses everybody from his little talk, except for T'Pol, and he threatens her because she helped Boris regain control of the ship. She's like, he wanted to kill you, so there's that.
Right.
And she's like, but, you know, he's dead now, so now, you know, I owe my allegiance to you.
I'm loyal to you.
Yeah, right? He then gets all kind of racist, and he calls Vulcans your people. And he tells her he needs her, you know, like her skills and all that. But if she tries to defy him again, he'll kill her. Dun, dun, dun. And I put in my notes that Archer has the attitude towards Vulcans that aged white male baby boomers have towards pretty much anybody.
It's so accurate. True. No. Yeah, especially since in this timeline, like, the Vulcans are supposed to be subservient to the Empire. Like, he says that, you know, Vulcans are slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly see that it's not just Vulcans. Like, later on, we'll get a scene between T'Pol and Dr. Phlox where she tells him, like, did you know that in this other universe, Denobians?
That works for me.
I'm blanking on the name of his race, that his people and the Federation are equal, like they have equal rights, and he's intrigued, so you kind of see, like, this is a pretty racist society that they're running here, like, the humans are in charge, and all of the non-human species are subservient. It's pretty gross.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how they could do that, but then it's like, Well, you know, you had like a little island of England do that to lots of other cultures, and I mean, not they weren't the only culture that did that, but you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a reflection of our own society.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it was exaggerated, but I mean, look at day to day now. I mean, it's actually getting worse.
Well, I mean, I don't know why they did this. There's not any politics in Star Trek.
What? Politics in my Star Trek? Why, I never.
I just get tickled politics. About people who have no clue.
I don't understand why everybody's like, since when is Star Trek so political? Since day one, genius. That's when it's been political. Did you ever see a Star Trek ever?
They had a black woman and a Japanese man on their first bridge, so get out of here, you racist scum.
It kills me when people say, like, keep my Marvel comics out of, politics and social. It's like, Marvel's been there since 1963. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, did you miss when Captain America was fighting fascism? Did you not see that? Did mm-hmm. you not see when Falcon, Sam was fighting racism mm-hmm. in Harlem? Like, mm-hmm. do you not remember this about Marvel? The X-Men mm-hmm. are an allegory for the civil rights movement?
That's exactly
Where
what
have
I was
you
say.
Been? What? You have never read a comic ever, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the thing, and I mean, it's so much of this stuff. And it kills me. It's like, you know, I follow Zed Kennedy's on Facebook, and they're like, oh man, you know, I like your lyrics, but and your music, but you're wrong on this. It's like, why are you following the Dead Kennedys? Like, just leave. You're not part of this anymore.
I don't understand why people take their time to bother other people like that. Just anyway. Get out of here, trolls.
But, I mean, think about this. We've spent, let's say, since 1945, like the World War II ended, there's been Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shows like this, where we're showing the effects of fascism. We basically said, Nazis are bad. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, they're making Nazis look bad. Well, I mean, duh!
The Empire in Star Wars is... The Third Reich, basically, too. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If you nobody was rooting for the Empire to blow up Alderaan. Nobody was rooting for the Empire to destroy the Rebels. Everybody was, you know, for the Rebel Alliance. You were anti-fascist then. Guess what? Because the Empire is fascist. So I don't understand people who don't see the politics in it, because it's just, I don't know. Anyway, we're just, yammering on about politics. But the point is, this is not a new thing. There have always been political issues addressed by major pop culture works. It's a reflection of the world that we live in, right? Life imitates, art imitates life.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Even if it was something that we inherently disagreed with, most of the time, like, I remember reading my dad telling me when I was a kid, you know, that the Beatles would open up their newspaper, see a story, and write a song about it, you know? I mean, that's how you get crap like Maxwell's Silver Hammer. But, you know, I mean, the point being is, you know, pop culture and reality frequently interject. You know, if something is big enough to reflect, influence our daily lives, it's going to eventually influence the pop culture we make. And I mean, mm-hmm. fascism, World War II, this stuff was influencing sci-fi from, you know, the minute, you know, Germany took hold. And now it's still there. And now we have, and I'm trying to avoid the politics here because who knows, but we have the current situation and it just kind of carries on from that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Life imitates art. Art imitates life.
Yep.
And so on.
Back to
you know, at least the dark times tend to bring great art, though, so.
Oh, boy. There's going to be too much art after this. So, we find Archer in his quarters wearing a Captain Kirk-style, like, uniform, like the green shirt, the one that actually looks green, not that looks kind of yellow. And it's
the green wraparound
V-neck
I'm for like, casual Fridays.
I'm like giggling too much to even say. And it has like the rickrack for the stripes, you know, denoting as a captain and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's swell. And Sato comes in and finds out that he's been looking at the historical records, and it has all the parallel universe information about Starfleet and the Federation and their alternate counterparts' service records. He asks Sato if she would like to know who she marries or how she dies in the other universe, and she's just like, no, just stop. And so then she looks him up because he's driving her crazy, and he gets really embarrassed because his counterpart is a acclaimed explorer, or rogue, as Scott called him. And, you know, he's got planets named after him, and, you know, he's kind of like a peacemaker and diplomat and all these kind of things. And this Archer is mad because his version of a great man is a conqueror, and he's going to take over things because he's going to be the emperor, blah, 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 you know. And she tells him to forget about it and just remember how happy the emperor will be when he sees this ship. And he's just like, I'm going to be the emperor, lady. I don't know about that. I'm taking over. Which, it just seems sort of funny that he was really embarrassed by his service record in the other place because he'd done so much, but it was just because I guess he thought he was a pansy or something. It's like, this guy just keeps getting worse and worse.
What? I actually loved that scene. I was just like, you know, because, you know, I found it, like, really telling about this version of the character that he was so evil that he looked at the goodness of his, like, interdimensional counterpart and was, like, angered by his, you know, good deeds.
Well, I like that, I mean, because you say evil, and I don't even think about him being evil necessarily, because that's always conjures up to me, like, twirling a mustache and tying someone to railroad tracks.
Yeah.
You know, because it's usually over the top. But yeah, like, he's such a departure from his alternate universe persona that he doesn't want to be a good person. He wants to be the best person.
I mean, you know, all this time that we've been watching, you know, the series Enterprise, you know, we've been watching the Captain Archer that's this great explorer, and, you know, it was so important in the founding of the Federation. And I agree with Scott. I really love this scene. I think it's one of the best scenes in this whole episode, of how he's so angry that his counterpart is a peacemaker. And he even says, you know, great men are not peacemakers. Great men are conquerors. You know, he wants to be like Alexander the Great, you know, or, you know, one of the Caesars or something like that. He doesn't want to be known as, like, you know, Gandhi or the Buddha or something like that. Like, he wants to be this conqueror, and that he's not. He's so angered by it. It becomes even more motivation for him. Now he wants to be the emperor. Like, this is like almost now becomes his drive for what he's going to do the rest of this episode.
Side note, why, like, he would know what happened to Julius Caesar or Alexander the Great or something, and know that people murdered them, basically.
True, but I mean, like,
but that's what he played, like, that's kind of, because I don't understand, I guess because I'm not that kind of like, usually I can wrap my mind around things, but for me, I'm like, I don't know why somebody would want to do that kind of thing to get somewhere else, because someone else is going to do that to them. And that's how all, like, a lot of the mirror universe people are in these things. But I think I'm not saying they did a bad job. I think they did a good job of this, because he's not just a mustache twirling guy, you know, like, he's a person, but he's a bad person. Not that he's just a villain. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so.
He has his perspective. I mean, the thing about it is, you think about, if you go through our history, all these people we deem as evil in history thought they were doing the right thing from their perspective. Mm-hmm. It was just evil from everyone else's perspective.
It's like, you know, the villain is the hero of his own story or something. Is that how it goes?
Exactly. Precisely. I mean, he doesn't see himself as the Hitler of, you know, the Federation in this story. He sees himself as the conqueror that's going to make things right. But, I mean, in the process, you know, he can't view himself through the eyes of the evil that has come mm-hmm. before.
Mm-hmm. It's too close to reality.
I've noticed last night. I'm on the Scream Stream podcast, right? Mm-hmm. We're doing the John Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy. You know, The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and The Mouth of Madness. So I watched mm-hmm. Prince of Darkness with Jess last night. And Prince of Darkness is about these people that hold up in a church with a test tube that contains basically liquid Satan. All right? And people are, and you know, like, you don't remember in a horror movie where zombies bite you, you become a zombie. In this film, they spit liquid into your mouth, and you become, like, this evil demonic entity. And it's been a few years since I've seen Prince of Darkness, but it became immediately apparent that this was not the appropriate movie for the current times, because it felt very much like, you know, an allegory. I mean, John Carpenter has always been one of those directors that always has a nail on the head with social, basically social subtext. But in this case, you know, it feels like, oh, you know, this current pandemic, stand 6 feet apart, social distancing. Well, if these people had stood 6 to 12 feet away from these demon creatures, they would not be demon creatures themselves because of the liquid not being able to get in their mouth. So it became like too close to home. Right.
That's insane.
Right. It was just like, I've loved this movie for decades, but I've only seen it like 4 or 5 times. And I'm like, yeah, I can't really watch this right now. This is, yeah, too close. And that's what happens. You see stuff like In a Mirror Darkly, and you're like, man, we shouldn't see our current reality reflected in this, but damn it, our current reality is reflected in this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to say another, like, cliched phrase, but, you know, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it.
It applies now more than ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's like, you think, you know, we have access to all this technology, all this information, you have it at your fingertips. Anything you want to know, 5 seconds away. And yet, there's all this false information that people tend to fall trap to. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is how you get the reality. I mean, they don't show you how the reality in the mirror universe came to be. But you can put it, piece it together that it was something like, you know, people being told, hey, these Vulcans, they're an evil race, you know? Mm-hmm. They may have given us technology to be spacefaring, and they may be super geniuses, but they're still evil, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like the Native Americans. They basically gave us the ability to live on this continent, but we still pushed them, you know, mm-hmm. as far away as we could.
Mm-hmm. This is getting deep.
I know.
Oh, yeah. I feel so. I'm not sure if this is good or bad. I'm sorry, you know?
Let's go back to a more lighter bit.
This is hard with this episode.
Ensign Kelby gets killed by a large creature.
Creature feature.
Yeah. So he was trying to repair the warp drive, and Tucker was yelling at him about it, and he goes up, and then he's like, gulp. It was like it's like that scene in Jurassic Park where Newman gets. No, it's not him. It's the guy and the other guy. The guy in the porta potty gets like chomped up.
Oh yeah, yeah, the lawyer.
Not the guy that plays.
Can I just say the fact that you called him Newman was just, it made my night right there.
I cannot ever remember what his name is in that movie.
Oh, Wayne Knight, I think.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Or his real name. That's his real name. I just always think of him from Seinfeld. I'm sorry, but no, he gets taken down by the velociraptors. Anyway.
Justifiably so. You know, yes. I mean, that role is iconic, so.
So, Tucker was also wearing his counterpart's uniform, basically. Like, he was, or the future counterpart sort of uniform. So he was also wearing, like, an original series era uniform. We go to sick bay, and Phlox says that it had to be some sort of large reptile that killed Kelby, and the sensors are offline, so they can't really find where it's hiding, which it's almost like you see a spider in your house and you go to swat it and then it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
I had that with a, like, wasp yesterday.
Oh, God. Oof. And then you're like, well, guess I better burn the house down now just to be safe.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like it's time to move.
They're here.
So, we see Mayweather torturing a Thalan slave that was left on board while Archer interrogates him, wanting to know who or what this thing is and where it's hiding and what's going on and who's his boss and what's, you know, where were we the night of October 23rd? You know, that kind of thing. And so he reveals that their slave master is a Gorn named Slar, and Slar has sabotaged the ship. And if you are not as into the original series like me, you probably know the Gorn, but you may or may not know the name, but it's that reptile thing that Captain Kirk had a fight with.
anything that William Shatner punched is iconic.
Yeah.
His punch made it iconic.
I feel like people would recognize that if they had just watched, you know, the 90s Star Treks or something, but they would know that. Like, they may not know what the creature's called, but they know that, you know, Captain Kirk slugs him. Because anything for him to have a ripped shirt or whatever, it seemed like
on the show. Well, who wouldn't want that?
I like that Phlox compares it to a velociraptor, because I just mentioned velociraptors, number one. But also, I think the original one kind of looks like Bosk from Star Wars, because I have to mention Star Wars as many times as I can. I have to have Star Wars references.
He does look a little like Bosk, although I always thought Bosk looked more like the reptile character from The Last Starfighter.
Oh. Ooh. Nice.
I do not disapprove of the Bosk reference. I think it is accurate.
I do also have a Doctor Who reference, because the costume, the Bosk wore, was actually a costume from the BBC, like, you know, costumes or whatever. I guess Pinewood Studios had it or whatever. But so it was on an episode of Doctor Who. Anyway.
Ooh, nice. I did not realize that.
That's cool.
I should have realized that, but I didn't realize that. But now the question is, can you make an Ewok adventure reference in this?
No.
Ah.
I know. If you can, I'd go for it, but I don't think I can.
Well, I'll put my caravan of courage together and try and figure. There you go. Instant.
All right, so so Reed gives us some exposition, saying how they cornered the Gorn, but then the two that went after him didn't come back because, you know, they probably got eaten too. And Archer sees the alternate universe of himself telling him to achieve more fame and honor. Like, the first time I watched it, I'm like, he's just going crazy. But then I realized, oh, it's supposed to be because his hair is different. His hair's like it is normally. And it's like, oh, he thinks, you know, he's imagining his alternate universe self being like, what's wrong with you, buddy? It's not like, you know, the angel or devil or whatever on your shoulder. It's like, you know, he's supposed to be such a great man. So now, of course, he's going to taunt this Archer. I don't know. But it's sort of hilarious because, you know, he's the only one who can see him. He decides that they're going to lead a small assault team to kill the Gorn. Sato gets the Gorn signal, it talks to Archer, and it's just like, I want to get out of here. Let me off, and I'll tell you where I hid the parts to your ship. And Archer's like, no, you're going to tell us right now where those regulators are. Right now. You know, the Gorn's pretty astute because it made a point to say that humans are killers and that they would probably kill him anyway, and he doesn't want to be killed. So, he knows what he's talking about. So, then we're in the turbo lift, and Archer gets owned by his imaginary alternate self again. They find the Gorn's location and go after it in the Jeffries tubes, I think. Is that where they were? I just thought that's what it was, but I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't call them Jeffries tubes back in the original series. That was definitely a Next Gen thing, but yeah, I guess they are Jeffries tubes or like access points or whatever, but yeah, let's call them Jeffries tubes.
Okay. They find a communicator that is set to send off the Gorn's biosignal to throw them off. When the communicator is closed, the Gorn's like, sets off a bomb. And Reed realizes this and he yells, "It's a trap!" And so there's another Star Wars reference. So Archer and a crewman run in to find the crew dead or dying. And Archer calls DePaul to see where it's moved to. She said that it's in the main hull and they find dead crewmen scattered about on their way to find the Gorn. Archer, of course, has to get in a fist fight with the Gorn because tradition.
I mean, he is wearing that shirt, so
good point.
I think he has to fight the Gorn. I mean, you know.
Good point.
Synchronicity.
The crew member that's with him gets killed, and then he has to Paul change the gravity to 20 G's on this gravity plate that he's kind of lured the Gorn to. And so then it can't really stand up, so Archer kills it, and the dog is back. I like they show that he kind of plays dirty, too, because, you know, he knows he can't defeat the Gorn on his own, so he's like, I'm going to use technology on my side.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a bad plan. I mean, certainly we could see any of our other captains that we've, you know, followed over the years doing the same thing, except they probably wouldn't kill the Gorn. They'd more likely just throw him in the brig and then return him to his people. Yeah, or deliver him to the authorities or whatever.
After that, we get Starlog, and it's January 18th, 2155. I like star dates better.
I do too. It's so weird that they like give a regular date that we use right now. I like star date.
I do too. I love us switching them around. And excuse me while I go deal with the dog again. So we find out that Tucker has fixed the warp drive, and in the mess hall, T'Pol asks how Reed is, and Phlox nonchalantly says, it's 50-50. He's just like, she asks what all he's been looking up on the computer, because not only is he nosy about things looking on the computer, she's nosy seeing who's looking up stuff on the computer. And he says he wanted to look up the literature and remarks that Shakespeare was just as morbid as he was before. T'Pol tells him to look into the Federation of Planets, because their species are equal to humans there. So then we hear a klaxon blare, and they get up from their table. Then we are on the bridge, I think, and the klaxon's still going off. The Defiance had shown up as the ISS Avenger is being attacked by 4 rebel spacecraft. Oh. Watch out. Rebel spacecraft. The Avengers commanding officer is Admiral Black. He comes aboard for an inspection and is accompanied by his first officer, Soval. Archer asks to be named Captain of the Defiant, but Black's like, nah, man. Don't worry about it. So then the imaginary alternate Archer shows up again and taunts him. And he gets really annoyed and disintegrates the Admiral with a phaser. It's like, oh! And we're also dealing with toxic masculinity on this show.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
absolutely.
So then we see Archer giving a speech to the officers of both ships, you know, in a cargo bay or a, I don't know, somewhere where he's got a place he can lord over people and talk to them. He says they should move against Starfleet and the Empire. It's like, oh, now he's wanting to, like, you know, completely mutiny towards everybody. And Sovol and T'Pol are contemplating a future where alien species are respected and treated as equals. And I didn't mention this, but if you watch this, Sovol's also a Vulcan. So, they have a common bond.
Well, in the regular Enterprise episodes, Sovol is a character that comes, that shows up a lot.
Okay.
He's I think he's on the Vulcan High Council, Vulcan Command, or an ambassador or something. He's like always on Earth. Like, so he was one of the Vulcans who was always sort of like, in charge of helping humans become ready to go into space. And, you know, the Vulcans held humans back for quite a number of years. They, before they let them like develop, you know, warp four. So yeah, Sovol is a character that we do see a lot in this series.
Okay.
Overall.
Okay. That's good to know. Thank you. So he tells T'Pol he doesn't think that the Federation could exist in their universe, but, you know, she tries to convince him, and he says that he's too old to be a revolutionary. But little does he know, Spock will do that until he dies again, so...
True.
We're back in Archer's quarters. Sato wakes up to find Archer panicking. She suggests getting rid of T'Pol, and he takes that suggestion to heart and decides the best thing to do is to get rid of all the aliens. Like, he went super racist kind of guy. Like, I guess he didn't, I guess it wasn't as bad as it could have been. He could have said, oh, well, let's kill them all, but, he's like, they need to go.
Yeah, this is, talk about a little too close to real life stuff. Like, this is an incredibly xenophobic attitude, right? Where he's like, let's get rid of everybody who doesn't look like us. And it's like, whoa. All right, calm down there, buddy.
She reminds him that Phlox is also an alien. And, you know, he better not get sick if he's going to get rid of Phlox because they don't have another doctor. But Archer's like, rebellion isn't in his nature. And... I was like, what did I write? I was trying to see what I wrote. And what I wrote, on my notes was, it's like, oh yeah, you can't even stay here even if you grew up here. You know, like the whole getting rid of DACA people. And, you know, and if your college is going online only, you gotta go. You can't stay here. It's like, they did not know 15 years ago how accurate some of these things would be.
But I think, it says a lot about human nature because obviously they didn't know it was going to happen 15 years later, but, only the Simpsons know what's going to happen in 15 years, apparently. But I think there's always been this sort of attitude in many countries, in many empires that have come and gone. Look at Brexit. I mean, a lot of the motivation behind Brexit is racially motivated. A lot of many genocides that have happened in different nations are completely, you know, racially or religiously motivated. It's, you know, I don't want us to get terribly political, but it's hard not to because, I mean, this episode has a lot of stuff in it that people have been dealing with for centuries. I mean, it just goes to show how far we still have to go as the human race to get past all of this. Because, you know. So I thought you wanted me to stop and not get too far.
No, I was gonna.
It's impossible.
If people out there are listening to us and they think that others having rights and access to a healthy, clean environment, healthcare and all, like, if they think that just other people get it, you know, you throw them out or whatever because they're not the same and who cares what happens to them, I don't necessarily want them listening to us anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Don't listen to us. You won't like it.
On this podcast, Vulcan Lives Matter.
I mean, it's all relevant. It really is.
It's sad that it is.
You know, I mean, pop culture can make an impact. I mean, some people will get pissed off when they see what they think is, you know, politics being thrown in their face. But at the same time, there's going to be a percentage of people that see, oh, this kind of explains it in a way that makes an impact to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it works.
I hope more people feel like that because, honestly, politics is, you know, where people's tax money, how much taxes you take out and where that money goes, that kind of stuff is really political. Not people's lives. I need to stop before I go too far.
I know. But, you know, if you listen to this and you know Brooke and I in real life, you already know how we feel about a lot of stuff. So, you know, you're always welcome to, of course, chime in with a tweet or an email, whatever. But, yeah, I think you all know at this point where Brooke and I feel about, how Brooke and I feel about many of these issues. So, yeah.
I got way off there. So back in Archer's quarters, him and Sato, they have some space sex because she's all like, oh, I've never been a consort to an emperor. She really knows how to use people to get to go where she wants to go. So can't blame her for that.
It's the only thing that keeps me from like vomiting all over this stuff is the fact of how I know the episode ends up. Yeah. For Hoshi. So I'm keeping the bile down. Otherwise I would be barfing all over this stuff. But yeah, it's
that might not be good for your computer.
Probably not. I know. I'm just virtually, you know, vomiting on it.
So then we're on the bridge and we see T'Pol sneakily downloading some information onto like a 3.5-inch floppy disk. And I found some of those one day. I was going to make some art with them, and I never have. That's the only reason why I still have them 20 years later. Archer comes in and tells her services are no longer needed and has her escorted to the transporter room because, you know, she can't be trusted. It takes her weapons and all that kind of thing. He has sent a message to Starfleet demanding them to surrender. And he threatens Fleet Admiral Gardner, and Gardner threatens him back, of course. You're not gonna threaten me. Then we have Phlox, who's been called over to the Avenger for a medical emergency. Actually, it's just T'Pol and Sovol called him over to be like, hey, you're the only alien left over there. You need to sabotage stuff for us because, yeah, you know, you're the only one that's even trusted. You need to disable some systems. And finally, they convince him. And what's hilarious is that they promise him as big, as much of, like, torture devices and things as he wants, and women.
Yeah.
And I take it that this is not, like, because he's usually, like, really nice and caring and stuff, right? Not, like, torture them.
No, absolutely. He's the total opposite. Like, in real life, quote unquote, you know, because it's real life on Star Trek, he's like incredibly caring and nurturing. Like, he's a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to eat animal flesh. And I think the whole idea of like offering him all these women is because Denobulans have like a very complicated married life. Like, each husband Now, how is it? I think each husband has like three wives, and all the wives have three husbands too. Like, there's lots of like, it's basically a very open polyamorous relationships where, so, you know, Dr. Phlox has like three wives. And
it started out, I was not with you on it, and then you turned me around, so.
No, it's like, I know, right? It's like, what's great about it is, like, everybody's on the same page about it.
Yeah.
There's no hurt feelings. It's just about, oh, well, you know, why should you just be expected to just love one person forever? Like, you could love multiple people. We could all love each other, and they have kids together and all that. So it's like a very sort of complex marriage situation in that way. So I think that's what the whole, you can have all the women you want kind of a thing comes from.
So they convince him and everything, and then he leaves. And to Paul, as she's going down one of these corridors trying to go back to somewhere else, she gets accosted by Sato and another crew member about schematics that she downloaded before she was unceremoniously thrown off the Defiant. They fight. Obviously, T'Pol beats up the guy, and then, of course, the two women fight, so they have, like, a cat fight. you know, I guess it was a little better than some, but, you know, it's certainly not the kind of, like, fighting we see women do in a lot of things nowadays, so.
Kicking it old school a little bit.
So, T'Pol knocks her out, and then the other crewman is, you know, not dead, he was just knocked to the floor, knocked out or whatever, and he stuns her, so, uh-oh. Then we're back on the Defiant, and T'Pol is there, where she's been taken, and Archer is demanding to know who she's working with. She's like, the Federation is the future, man. That's what we're gonna do. They're, you know, trying to talk to her and figure out who all she's working with and what's going on, and Phlox happens to succeed in disabling the ship's systems with help from Sovol in his ear, you know, like his little walkie-talkie kind of thing. I'm not like a walkie-talkie, but, you know, like the little ear. But anyway, you've seen James Bond movies or something. I don't know. Something
yeah.
with
all
things
of them.
In their ears.
Every single one.
Sorry, I don't know why that tickled me so much that you're like, every single one.
Well, I'm looking at the box set.
I'm not surprised. Archer then orders all the aliens on the Avenger to be rounded up when the systems go down. Sovol then attacks, but Tucker disables Phlox and restores the power. Because, you know, Phlox just sort of pulled the things out and leaned them over, and they're right there for Tucker to put back in. It's not like he shattered whatever it was he took out. Come on, Phlox, you could have done that. Could have just ripped it out and threw it to the ground and broken it. Then the Defiant destroys the Avenger.
Not cool, Defiant. Not
so,
cool.
So, yeah, like, you know, it was bad enough that they were rounding up all the aliens, because I'm sure they were gonna put them in a nice camp where they would be safe.
Yeah, in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
At the border.
Right. And
oh boy, there we go again.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, but then it's just like, screw it. We're just gonna shoot him out of the sky, so.
Although I have to ask, where is the border in space?
I don't know. It's like a theoretical border, I guess. A metaphorical border.
Yes. On the metaphorical border. So, we see Archer and Sato celebrating in his captain's quarters with champagne and more space sex. Archer dies after being poisoned by her. You know, she put something in his champagne, and he just pours it all over his face, and then, like, immediately goes into, like, cardiac arrest or something.
That must have been some seriously strong poison.
Well, maybe it was poison that acts faster when it gets in your eyes. She didn't know it was going to get in his eyes, but it did, so then, you know. So then, Mayweather comes in, and him and Sato kiss, because now he's in league with her.
I have to know, Brooke, when you saw this for the first time, because I didn't see this terribly that terribly long ago for the first time myself. Were you surprised that that Sato, like, turned on him and poisoned him, or were you like, oh, I saw that coming?
I wasn't surprised, but I didn't know it was going to happen. Like, because you could tell from her characterization that she was sort of down for anything to get ahead. So it wasn't surprising that she did it. It's just, I didn't see it coming like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe she would have shot him in the back or something. I don't know.
Okay.
But in my notes I put, that was a lot of poison. He barely got any in his system. So then, the last scene, they're, you know, going to Earth. They're on the advanced and powerful Defiant. Sato, because I was saying her name wrong, and I'm sorry, contacts Admiral Gardner, demanding him to surrender. And she declares herself Empress. So, you know, that's what she had in mind the whole time. Probably if Archer hadn't have taken out the captain before, she probably would have taken out Forrest herself eventually. Who knows?
Career ambitions, good to have.
Yeah. So, yeah. Any comments on the episode? The storyline or anything?
I mean, not too much. I mean, I just enjoyed it. I mean, mm-hmm. Granted, I saw season 3 and all the way through season 4 by the time I saw this, and then of course, it's set in a Mirror Darkly, and I'm like, oh, Mirror Universe episode. Great. You know, I mean, you see Mirror in a Star Trek title, you know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, it lived up to my expectations completely. You know, I mean, Scott Bakula, given a chance to hams it up like Scott Bakula.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to be when I go and watch more of this, because I just keep thinking of him as Sam from Quantum Leap. Like, I can't. That's all I ever see him as.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is, I mean, this actually is so interesting because this was made long before Star Trek Discovery was even thought of, and yet there's so many interesting parallels between Star Trek Discovery and the Mirror Universe there and this Mirror Universe. And then you think about all the Mirror Universe episodes that come after this. And it's just, I don't know, this is a really great way that they kind of went back and showed you the beginning of the Mirror Universe. I mean, not the real beginning, but to kind of show you before we knew what the Mirror Universe was. I thought it was really great, actually, as well. I thought it was a really fun Mirror Universe episode. But, obviously very dark, as the title would imply, but very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. I didn't need the, like, overacting. Because it wasn't the whole way through. It wasn't everyone always totally over the top. You know, it was like, sometimes before over the top, so
we needed more mustache twirling,
right? Yeah, or less. Like, it was in the middle, and I didn't like that it was in the middle, but I mean, the story was interesting, and like I said, you know, they didn't make him just, they made him like a person, and more of a person that does bad things, because you know that that's a good thing about villains, when you can kind of be like, oh, you almost feel sorry for him, and then you're like, no, they're bad. So yeah, this was voted by lots of different places as one of the top Mirror Universe episodes. Sci-Fi ranked it as the 5th best Mirror Universe episode. And to me, that sounded like a lot. And then I remembered that there's like that many just DS9 alone. So, you know, 5th best, whatever. Yeah, and Empire ranked this as the 46th best episode just in general of the top 50 episodes out of all 700 at the time, so
that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's like, all right. But yeah, I don't think I have any more trivia or anything. If anybody's got any or anything you'd like to say about anything.
I mean, the funny thing is, they did this, like, I think 2 or 3 episodes before the end of the whole series. So,
I mean... They didn't know it was going to be the end of the series when they started filming these, right? They just didn't get renewed, right?
Well, I think they kind of did because the last episode, 2 episodes later, mm-hmm. definitely played, you know, as a finale. So, I mean... It seems like if episodic TV is shot, you know, an episode a week or an episode every 2 mm-hmm. weeks, I'm not sure if that's still how they do things, but I mean, that's how I remember being told, you know, mm-hmm. when I worked in TV, then they would have known that there's a chance they were getting chopped.
Right. It's not like nowadays of streaming and they film the whole season first.
I mean, it's so weird, like, because every Star Trek series, you know, I mean, even including the original, always had a rough start. I mean, mm-hmm. and so, it, you know, like, I imagine seasons 5, 6, and 7 of Enterprise would have been brilliant. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, and we would still be talking about it in positive tones today, aside from the music. But, you know, instead we get it cut off just as it was reaching that high point that, like, Next Gen or, you know, Deep Space Nine, you know, was getting at, you know, at that point.
We'll never know unless in the mirror universe it went on longer.
Exactly. I mean, it's Netflix ain't bringing this one back.
No.
Yeah, unfortunately not. There's not going to be, you know, Star Trek Archer like Star Trek Picard, unfortunately. But, great episode pick, though, Scott. I enjoyed revisiting this two-parter with Enterprise.
You know, I mean, there's so many great Star Trek episodes, but I feel like Enterprise gets the shaft when it comes to Star Trek. And when I got the Blu-ray this maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, I'm like, why are people hating this? This is great. You know, this is fun. I mean, this is, you know, you know, I've been saying the same thing about, like, Solo, you know, the new Star Wars movie that came out a few years back. People were hating on it. And I'm like, this is literally the best Star Wars movie that has come out since Disney has taken over. And
I thought it was fun.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, if you go back to the original Star Wars trilogy, they weren't trying to make masterpieces. They were trying to make good, fun, pulpy sci-fi cinema. You know, and, and nowadays, when you go back to Star Wars, it has such a reputation behind it. The biggest film franchise in the world, epic space adventure, that I think they forget that when it comes down to it, Star Wars is pulpy, fun science fiction. And out of all the recent Star Wars movies, Solo captured that atmosphere of pulp science fiction more than any other film, probably since Return of the Jedi. There's my annoying perspective that everyone disagrees with.
I mean, The Mandalorian is almost like my favorite Star Wars in general, almost. I love it so much. I like it better than some of the movies. Sometimes I remember, and sometimes I forget, that my future ex-husband is in it. But, you know, that's a whole other thing.
I just wanted
to say that, because I think it's ridiculous when dudes say, oh, it's my next ex-wife or something. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't do that.
Now that we've gone off the rails again, at least we were done with the episode.
That's true.
Give me the opportunity to go off the rails, I will. I'm like a walking Mr. Bungle record.
Alright, Scott, give us where else people can find you if you want, again, like you did the last time, just in case people weren't listening, or so they don't have to go back and listen.
Alright, well, I'm the editor of EuroCultAV.com. That's EuroCultAudioVideoAV.com. Which is why I'm pretentious about audio video, because I review audio video. We're on Twitter and Facebook as EuroCultAV. Once a month, I do a live tweet with Richard Schmidt of Doom Movie-Thon. You can find us on Facebook as Movie Party Crew, and we have a custom hashtag every month. We watch, you know, a horror movie or an Asian action movie, and we just get together and we tweet about it. Sometimes we joke about the movie. Sometimes we're just like, oh, man, this is so cool. Look at that, you know, that sort of thing. I write for the occasional other zine or things, but it's been a few years since I've been in for anything else. So just keep an eye out on EuroCultAV. That's my consistent writing base.
Cool. And they have, like, a huge backlog of all the different things that they've done. Hey, have you gotten everything moved over? I know you were talking about that the other day.
No, it's probably going to take 6 months or longer, because EuroCultAV, the original site had, like, 2,500 reviews. And so we moved everything to WordPress, and we have, like, maybe 200 moved over.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, I mean, I'm a programmer in my real life for a very, very big company, and we're doing a very big project now, so I'm working more hours to meet deadlines, so, you know, moving 15-year-old reviews of The Sinful Dwarf over doesn't become, you know, the highest priority.
Right.
Yeah. I would love to get those Sinful Dwarf reviews over for everyone to read again. But we'll get to it.
Well, maybe,
and I'll get your Teen Wolf review up there.
If you reach out to Scott, maybe he can send you one, a review of something, some weird obscure film you're wanting to watch.
I've actually
done
that recently. But no, there's still like there's like probably 300 reviews on the new EuroCult AV, 100 or 150 the old ones, and then, you know, we're always constantly updating.
Yeah.
I mean, the cool thing about the WordPress thing is, I have a group of writers that could. The old website, my big thing was I would have to publish every mm-hmm. single person's review. Your Teen Wolf review, I'd copy and make the page and everything. Mm-hmm. Now anyone who writes, they have a login, they can copy and paste the review, put the images they want, design it mm-hmm. their way. And it just takes, so, you know, I'll wake up some mornings and see that, you know, someone posted 2 reviews overnight, or I'll mm-hmm. be at work and looking at my phone over lunch and I'll be like, oh, 3 reviews got posted. It's easier that way, at least for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cause we have, for popcultureleftovers.com, we have like 15 people who signed up to do reviews, but only about 6 of us do reviews, but we all do a lot of reviews, and it's up to Brian, the main guy, to put it on the website.
And so, and it's a pain to do that.
Yeah, so sometimes it takes a while. And right. we put and them on Rotten Tomatoes, so he has to go in there and do it there, and then, yeah, and the link and everything.
Well,
so.
I mean, in the case, you know, like, I mean, Eurocult AV, like, and I'm revealing a little bit technical details here. 10 years ago, when we first started, you know, 8 years ago, we would get an insane amount of hits, right? And then because the old site wasn't mobile optimized, Google stopped indexing us. So we started losing a lot of hits, which is why I put it on WordPress, you know? So, I mean, it's not the best solution, but, I mean, if you pull up Eurocult AV on your phone right now, you can actually read it. I mean, I didn't know 11 years ago how big. I mean, I've always read stuff on my desktop PC, you know, and whatever. And, you know, I go to work and I've got 3 monitors on my desk. So it's never been like, oh, I'm going to read reviews on my phone.
I know, I don't.
Anyway, yeah, all that, yeah, right, yeah. We're so far away from Star Trek at this point, so I'll let you,
It's the end where, you know, you're telling people where to find you and some banter. It's okay.
You know, I did Eurocult AV 11 years, just making all this stuff myself, and now I'm just like, you guys, you want to post a review? You post your review. Just keep, you know, there are certain stipulations that if I catch it, you know, but overall, good.
If anyone has noticed on our social media feeds, Rebecca and I are doing a new podcast with my roommate Cindy, and it is about She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, and it's called She-Ra and the Podcast of Power.
Very exciting.
I love the name of our show.
So, yeah, so they're released once a week, and they're not real long episodes because the TV show's not long episodes, but we're not recapping. We're just sort of talking about the things we liked in it, like the issues and all kinds, you know, like just talking about what it's about. It's a lot of fun. I know that sounds like
that,
people
right?
really want to hear that if I say it like that.
What was your question, Scott?
This is the last season they're doing of the rebooted She-Ra, right?
Yeah, it came out, I don't know, a month ago?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sad
about
it.
The whole series is finished. It's 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. So we're going back as like a retrospective, talking about the characters in each mm-hmm. episode. And, it's more like a roundtable discussion about the themes and the character progression and stuff. And yes, it's a show that all 3 of us really truly have loved since episode 1 of that first season. So yeah, we're super happy to and excited to be doing this podcast talking about the show.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun us sitting around talking.
Well, yeah, always fun sitting around talking.
So yeah, I think that's it.
Right. Well, awesome. You have a great night. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Yes, we enjoyed having you again.
And we'll see you next time, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. All right. Have a great night.
Yep.
PicardCast is hosted by Brooke and Rebecca. You can find us at facebook.com/PicardCast, on twitter.com@ThePicardCast, or email us at PicardCast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and boldly go where no one has gone before.